You probably don't think about it much, but how many times a day do you interact with a lock, a key, or maybe an access system?
It's probably more than you realize.
Yeah, think about it. Unlocking your front door, swiping into your office building, or even that hotel key card you used on your last vacation. These aren't just pieces of metal or plastic, right?
Not at all. They're sophisticated access solutions, often working silently in the background, keeping us safe and, well, keeping our world connected.
Today, we're taking a deep dive into the world of ASSA ABLOY. Now, that's a company you might not have heard of directly, but believe me, they are the undisputed global leader in exactly these kinds of access solutions. They're literally helping billions of people experience a safer and more open world. That's their mission statement.
And our mission today is to truly unpack this fascinating, often invisible giant. We want to understand its unique business model, what makes it so resilient. We want to explore the massive industry it operates within and really uncover what makes it such a powerhouse in a sector that's undergoing, well, significant transformative technological change.
And to do that, we'll be drawing from a comprehensive investment research analysis. We're aiming to get to the core of what you need to know, distilling the most critical insights for you.
Exactly.
So let's peel back the layers of this titan of security and see what surprising nuggets of knowledge we can find hidden inside.
Sounds good.
All right, let's kick things off by getting to know the global gatekeeper itself, ASSA ABLOY. Now, this isn't some ancient dusky lockmaker that's been around for centuries. It's actually a relatively young powerhouse.
That's right. It was forged back in 1994 from a really strategic merger of two Nordic industrial giants, Sweden's ASSA and Finland's ABLOY.
So relatively recent then.
Yeah, and this wasn't just two companies deciding to team up. It was a very deliberate strategic move. It immediately set them on this ambitious path towards global leadership in the access solutions space.
And it seems they achieved that goal pretty quickly.
They really did. From that initial merger, they've systematically, almost relentlessly, you could say, evolved into the undisputed global leader in this sector. And that vision you mentioned.
Experience a safer and more open world.
Exactly. It's incredibly clear and compelling. It's a powerful, succinct way to describe their, frankly, profound impact on daily life.
Yeah.
And when you look at their sheer scale today, it's quite staggering.
How big are we talking?
Well, as of 2023, they employed approximately 61,000 people globally,
Wow.
a truly massive workforce, and they generated an impressive SEK 141 billion in sales.
Okay, SEK 141 billion. What's that in, say, US dollars?
Rough calculation. That's around 13.5 billion US dollars. So a huge footprint for a company maybe you hadn't heard of before today.
Definitely.
And what's crucial here isn't just the size, but how they got there. It's really a testament to this three-decade-long strategy that combines consistent organic innovation with well, truly prolific and disciplined acquisition program.
Right. We'll definitely need to dig into that M&A piece later.
Oh, absolutely. It's key to understanding their brilliance.
So that's a huge footprint. And I imagine to manage such an expansive operation, they need a clear structure, right?
They do. They've intelligently structured their business into five distinct pillars or core business segments, each with a specialized focus. And importantly, this highly decentralized structure is a real hallmark of their operating model.
Decentralized. How does that work in practice?
It gives them incredible market agility. It's something that's genuinely difficult for their competitors to replicate effectively.
Interesting. Okay, let's break down those five pillars. How do they contribute to their global dominance?
Right. First up, we have Opening Solutions EMEA that covers Europe, the Middle East, India, and Africa. Think of this division as the backbone.
Okay.
It focuses on everything from traditional mechanical locks and modern electromechanical ones, digital door locks, smart home solutions, even high security doors.
So a broad range.
Very broad. And what's crucial about this region is how meticulously they adapt to the incredibly diverse local market standards and, you know, the stringent security requirements. Think about the regulatory landscape across all those countries.
Must be incredibly complex.
It's a puzzle, and they've pretty much mastered it. Their focus here is increasingly on driving digital solutions, both commercial and residential. You see examples like the Incedo access control system or Aperio wireless lock technology.
Okay, so EREMI is the backbone, strong focus on local adaptation and pushing digital. What about across the Atlantic?
Right, that brings us to Opening Solutions Americas. North and South America. They offer a very similar portfolio of mechanical, electromechanical locks, door hardware, security doors, access control devices.
But is the strategic focus the same?
Similar, but with a really pronounced strategic priority on accelerating that transition to electronic and digital access control. We're seeing innovations like the Centrios platform.
Centrios?
Yeah. It's a mobile-first, cloud-based solution, really tailored specifically for small and medium-sized businesses, making advanced access control more accessible for them. Plus, they're developing next-generation exit devices through their big commercial brands like Sargent and Corbin Russwin. So it's a blend of that traditional strength with modern tech integration.
Makes sense. So Europe, Americas, moving further east.
Exactly. Opening solutions, Asia Pacific. This serves Asia and Oceania. Again, a full suite of mechanical, electromechanical locks, hardware, security doors, all meticulously tailored, again, to the specific standards and, frankly, the burgeoning demands of these really dynamic markets.
What are the growth initiatives there? It's such a huge, diverse region.
It is. Their initiatives are quite interesting. They're centering on developing localized smart residential products like their Bayou smart door lock platform, catering to specific regional tastes.
Bayou. Okay.
And they're also heavily focused on expanding their commercial segment presence. They do this by leveraging what they call their specification expertise.
That phrase, specification expertise, sounds significant. What exactly does that entail, practically speaking?
That's a fantastic question because it's subtle but incredibly powerful. Specification expertise basically means they work really closely, hand in glove, you might say, with architects, designers, and builders right from the very initial stages of a project.
So getting in on the ground floor.
Precisely. They ensure their solutions, the right locks, the right access control systems are integrated directly into the initial building designs, into the blueprints. They get specified from day one.
Ah, see. So once they're in the plan.
It makes it incredibly difficult for competitors to displace them later in the construction process. It creates this massive competitive moat and helps ensure their products become the standard in new builds.
That makes perfect sense. Okay, three regional pillars down. What's next? This one sounds different. Global technologies.
It is different. This isn't a regional division. Think of it as their specialized tech hub. It operates globally, leading in specific high-tech segments.
Like what?
Well, within this, you have HID Global. They're a premier manufacturer of access control systems, secure card issuance solutions, think passports, government ID cards, and advanced identification technology. High-level, secure digital identity stuff for governments and big corporations.
Okay, so HID is one part.
Then there's global solutions. This focuses on niche verticals, providing specialized products. Think Vingcard electronic hotel locks.
Ah, yes. I've definitely used those.
Almost certainly if you've stayed in a modern hotel. And also Traka key management systems, which are essential for large facilities managing, you know, thousands of keys or valuable assets.
So Global Technologies is the high-tech specialized arm.
Exactly. And crucially, it's really at the forefront of driving mobile access adoption, letting your smartphone become your key, and developing advanced biometric applications like fingerprint or facial recognition for entry. This is genuinely where a lot of the future of access control is being shaped.
Fascinating. Okay, that's four. What's the fifth and final pillar?
The last one is entrance systems. This division is a global supplier of entrance automation products, services, and also perimeter security solutions.
Entrance automation. Like automatic doors.
Exactly. Everything from automatic doors for retail stores and hospitals to heavy-duty industrial doors for warehouses, loading dock equipment, and even security gates for secured areas.
And what's their strategic focus here?
It's quite smart, actually. They're focused on growing their already high-margin service business, maintaining all those doors and systems, and developing a new generation of connected products.
Connected, meaning?
Products that can be monitored and managed digitally, often through subscription-based models, which, again, provides that predictable, high-quality, recurring revenue stream they are so good at cultivating across the whole business.
That recurring revenue theme keeps coming up. It seems central.
Absolutely crucial. And it ties directly into their broader geographic reach and market exposure. I mean, with operations in over 70 countries and sales in more than 180, their global footprint is truly extensive.
70 countries operating, selling in a 90. It's huge.
It allows them to maintain a strong local presence while serving an incredibly diverse global customer base, adapting to all those regional nuances we talked about.
And their revenue breakdown for fiscal year 2024. Mm. That tells a clear story, doesn't it, about where their strengths lie?
It really does. North America accounts for a significant chunk, 54% of sales, then Europe at 31%.
So the vast majority is in mature markets.
Exactly. Asia contributes 7%, Oceania 4%, South America 3%, and Africa just 1%.
What's fascinating here, as you pointed out, is how this geographic distribution impacts their stability and, well, their strategy too.
Precisely. That significant exposure to mature markets like North America and Europe provides immense resilience, a stable foundation.
Yeah.
But it also presents a natural challenge for, let's say, explosive organic growth. Those markets are already well developed.
So that's where the aftermarket comes in again.
This is exactly where their strategic focus on the aftermarket comes into play. It provides consistent revenue even when new construction activity slows down. While organic growth in 2024 was stable in these key regions, it was affected by weaker residential demand, which really highlights their sensitivity, in certain segments at least, to housing market fluctuations.
Okay, and this brings us right to the secret sauce, as you called it, of their entire business model. Its inherent resilience and that laser-like focus on recurring revenue. This isn't your typical industrial company, is it? Selling a product once and moving on.
Not at all. They've genuinely found a way to create an almost constant stream of future business. The aftermarket engine is arguably the most critical and, frankly, brilliant feature of their model.
And the numbers back that up, right? What was the split again?
In 2023, a massive two-thirds, 67% of their total sales came from the aftermarket. That includes renovations, remodeling, replacements of old locks, upgrades to new tech, ongoing services, maintenance. You name it.
Only 33% from new construction, then.
Exactly. Just a third from new builds.
Here's where it gets really interesting. And this is a true insight into their business model, I think. Think about it. Once a lock or an access system is installed, well, it needs maintenance, right? It needs upgrades as technology evolves. And eventually, it just needs replacing.
Absolutely. It's inevitable.
This creates a massive, really sticky revenue stream that's remarkably less vulnerable to the sharp economic ups and downs that typically plague, say, the new construction industry.
And that large, stable aftermarket business is continuously fed by the company's absolutely enormous installed base of products worldwide. We're talking literally billions of their products out there, indoors and buildings.
It's a genius setup because it provides a predictable and recurring revenue stream. It's almost like a subscription service for physical security, isn't it?
That's a great way to put it. And this defensive characteristic is a direct reason for their ability to deliver consistently strong results, regardless of broader macroeconomic conditions. It makes them far more stable than a pure construction play.
And that stability is further enhanced, you mentioned, by their strategic emphasis on shifting towards more recurring revenue models.
Yes. And this isn't just a buzzword for them. It's a very concerted, deliberate effort to increase the penetration of services and subscription-based offerings across all their segments.
Like software licenses?
Software licenses for access control systems, yeah. Comprehensive service agreements for automatic doors and the increasingly important access control as a service or accesses models.
Is that initiative gaining traction?
It really is. Subscription sales grew by a notable 17% in 2023 alone. This ongoing shift significantly enhances their revenue visibility, improves the overall quality of their earnings, and tends to increase their profitability too.
Okay, so aftermarket dominance, push for recurring revenue.
Yeah.
What else contributes to their resilience? You mentioned their structure earlier.
Right, the brilliance of their decentralized and agile operations. They aren't some top-heavy, slow-moving, giant bureaucracy. They operate with a highly decentralized organizational model.
Meaning local teams have more power.
Exactly. It empowers local and regional management teams with significant operational autonomy. This means they can respond swiftly and intelligently to unique local market challenges and opportunities, whether it's dealing with unexpected tariffs, navigating supply chain disruptions, or adapting to sudden shifts in regional demand.
That agility sounds like a core competitive strength.
It truly is. It allows them to act like a nimble local specialist, adapting products and strategies precisely to regional standards, specific building codes, cultural preferences, while simultaneously leveraging the immense resources and scale of a global titan.
That's a tricky balance to strike.
It is. And this balance is exceedingly difficult for more centralized competitors to replicate effectively. By giving those local teams the power to reallocate resources to high growth areas while maintaining tight cost discipline in weaker markets, they achieve this impressive blend of global power and local responsiveness.
And underpinning all of this, really amplifying their growth, is what we can only call their M&A engine in the long tail. They're legendary for their M&A strategy, aren't they? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely legendary. They've acquired nearly 400 companies since their inception in 1994.
400.
Nearly. And this isn't just about bumping up current revenue numbers. It's a truly strategic, long-term play that systematically builds their future.
How so? What's the long tail effect?
Well, what's fascinating here is the compounding effect. Each acquisition isn't just a one-time bump in current revenue. It's a strategic injection of future high-quality aftermarket and service revenue for decades to come.
Because they're acquiring more installed base.
Precisely. When they acquire a new door or lock manufacturer, they're not just buying a business. They're adding potentially millions of products to their installed base, all of which will inevitably require service, upgrades, and eventual replacement over a very long lifespan, sometimes decades.
So the revenue from acquired businesses has this long, highly profitable tail of future potential.
Exactly. It dramatically enhances the overall quality, predictability, and durability of their earnings stream. It's really a masterclass in long-term value creation through acquisition.
Wow. Okay, with such a clear understanding of Assa Abloy's foundations and its truly unique business model, let's turn our attention now to the broader industry. This is where we see the evolving landscape and how this giant navigates it, often setting the pace for others.
Right. And the global access control and security solutions market is fundamentally a growth story, not just for Assa Abloy, but as a broader trend.
What kind of numbers are we looking at for the market itself?
Market research estimates put it at roughly USD 10 billion to maybe USD 13 billion in 2024. And the projections are for pretty robust expansion.
Growth rate.
Consensus estimates point to a healthy compound annual growth rate, TGR, of between, say, 7.7% and 8.9% through the end of the decade and into the early 2030s.
So expanding significantly, doubling roughly every 8-10 years.
Something like that, yeah. Which is fantastic news for a dominant player like Assa Abloy that's well positioned to capture a large share of that expansion.
And what's fueling this growth? It feels like security is just more top of mind these days.
That's definitely part of it. These aren't just passing fads. They're deep, long-term, secular trends that are unlikely to reverse. First, as you said, increasing security concerns. Heightened global awareness of security threats. Rising crime rates in some areas. General public safety worries. Even geopolitical risks. It's all pushing businesses, institutions, and individuals to invest in more sophisticated, more reliable security solutions.
People want to feel safe.
Fundamentally, yes. And they're increasingly willing to pay for advanced protection.
What else?
Then you have urbanization and smart cities. As the global trend of urbanization continues relentlessly, more people moving into dense areas, and as this concept of smart cities takes root, well, there's a fundamental and growing need for advanced interconnected infrastructure.
Including access control.
Absolutely. Intelligent systems for managing access, optimizing public safety, ensuring efficient flow in these complex, dense, increasingly interconnected urban environments. It's a natural fit for advanced access solutions.
Makes sense. And the third driver you mentioned earlier was regulation.
Yes, and this is a very significant driver. Regulatory requirements. We're talking about constantly evolving building codes, stringent data privacy laws like GDPR in Europe, and increasingly complex industry-specific compliance mandates, particularly in highly regulated sectors like healthcare, finance, critical infrastructure. All of these factors are driving the mandatory adoption of secure, auditable, traceable access control systems.
So it's not just about convenience anymore, it's compliance.
It's often about meeting strict legal and safety mandates that carry heavy penalties for non-compliance. That's a powerful motivator for investment.
And that regulatory aspect seems closely tied to the huge technological shift happening, right? The digital revolution in access control.
It is. This is arguably the most profound and exciting shift happening in the industry right now. We're witnessing this fundamental transformation away from traditional, purely mechanical products towards seamlessly integrated electronic and digital solutions.
And this shift is driving market growth.
It's a primary catalyst, yeah. It creates entirely new product categories, new revenue streams, but it also presents both significant opportunities and, frankly, competitive challenges for established players like Assa Abloy.
You hear a lot about the Internet of Things, IoT, and cloud computing. How do they fit into access control?
They aren't just buzzwords here. They're truly the foundational technologies enabling a revolution. These technologies allow for real-time monitoring who's entering, who's exiting. They enable remote system management from anywhere in the world. They allow powerful data analytics to track trends, identify anomalies, and they enable the flexible delivery of access control as a service, a COAS.
OCOS. That sounds like a big deal. What's the practical benefit?
Well, imagine managing all your building's access points, whether it's a single office or a sprawling campus right from your smartphone or laptop anywhere. That's the tangible power of a COAS.
Okay, it's convenient.
It's more than convenience. These cloud-based models are gaining significant traction because they offer incredible scalability. Businesses can easily add or remove users, add or remove access points. They also greatly reduce the need for bulky, expensive, on-premise hardware and complex IT infrastructure.
Making advanced security more accessible.
Exactly. Especially for small and medium-sized enterprises, SMEs, that might not have the big IT departments to support complex traditional systems, it democratizes advanced security in a way.
And a very visible part of this digital trend, one that's probably impacting many listeners' homes right now, is the rise of smart locks.
Oh, definitely. This specific subsegment is projected to expand at an astonishing CGR of roughly 16% to 20%.
16 to 20%. That's huge growth.
It's significantly outpacing the broader access control market. And what's driving it? Well, the proliferation of smart home ecosystems, Google Home, Amazon Alexa, Apple HomeKit, the incredible convenience of keyless entry, remote entry via your smartphone, and just a general increase in consumer demand for both enhanced home security and, frankly, digital convenience.
People are getting used to managing things from their phones.
Absolutely. And building on that, there's also a very clear shift happening towards mobile and biometric credentials. We're rapidly moving away from traditional physical keys and cards towards using smartphones as ubiquitous mobile credentials.
Your phone is your key.
Right. Or even sophisticated biometric authentication like fingerprint or facial recognition. Mobile access aligns perfectly with modern work patterns and user preferences for convenience, flexibility. And biometrics, of course, offer an even higher level of security that's extremely difficult to replicate or compromise.
Now, despite all this high-tech talk, a big chunk of Asa Abloy's business is still tied to new construction, right? About a third, you said.
That's correct.
So what's the construction industry outlook looking like globally? You mentioned it's a bit of a mixed picture.
It is. While their business model is intelligently buffered by that large aftermarket exposure, remember, two-thirds resilient revenue, the health of global construction remains a key cyclical driver for that other third. And following a period of strong activity, construction spending is actually forecast to slow significantly in 2025.
Slowdown coming. Why?
Primarily driven by the persistent high interest rates we're seeing globally and consequently weaker investor confidence. In the crucial U.S. market, for instance, growth is expected to decelerate from an estimated 6.6% in 2024 down to just 1.4% in 2025.
Ouch. But you said it's a mixed picture. Yeah. That headline figure masks some nuances.
It does, and this is where it gets interesting. While residential construction and some traditional commercial sectors, like maybe office space, certainly face headwinds from those interest rates, strong investment continues in specific resilient areas.
Like what?
Things like data centers, healthcare facilities, advanced manufacturing plants, critical infrastructure projects. There's a real bifurcation or split happening.
So different demand profiles for different parts of Asa Abloy's business.
Exactly. While some areas might soften, others could remain robust or even grow, thanks partly to significant government incentives in some regions and ongoing corporate reshoring initiatives driving new factory builds. It's certainly not a uniform downturn across the entire construction landscape.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, another dynamic you mentioned that impacts the industry is the intricate regulatory maze.
Yes, and this is often overlooked but hugely impactful. The access control and door opening solutions industry is heavily, heavily influenced by a complex web of national and international building and life safety regulation.
Like fire codes.
Exactly. Think critical codes like the National Fire Protection Association, NFPA, standards here in the U.S., or the International Building Code, IBC. These impose really strict, non-negotiable requirements on product design, manufacturing quality, precise installation, particularly concerning things like emergency egress, how people get out in a fire.
And you said this is actually an advantage for established players.
It's a hidden but incredibly powerful advantage for established players like Asa Abloy. The sheer technical complexity and volume of these codes, combined with all the jurisdictional variations across different regions and countries, it creates a formidable barrier to entry.
New companies can't just jump in easily.
Not at all. We're talking about specific, detailed rules for everything from, say, the permissible use of electromagnetic locks on fire-rated doors to the exact functionality of delayed egress systems in public buildings or the requirements for stairwell reentry mechanisms in high-rises. The technical complexity and the sheer cost of obtaining all the necessary certifications make it incredibly difficult for new or non-specialized competitors to even begin.
So it's not just about having a good product.
Far from it. They would face a steep multi-year learning curve and absolutely massive compliance costs, far beyond just developing the product itself.
This challenging regulatory landscape really reinforces the competitive position of established players then.
It does. Companies like Assa Abloy possess deep institutional knowledge built over decades, extensive product certifications across countless markets, and crucially, strong, long-standing relationships with architects, specifiers, and regulatory bodies worldwide. This regulatory expertise is a vital, often underappreciated component of their enduring economic moat. It makes their leadership position incredibly difficult to challenge.
Speaking of competition, let's talk about the market structure and consolidation. Is it concentrated market or more fragmented?
Surprisingly fragmented, actually.
Yeah.
Which might not be what you'd expect for such a critical industry. One analysis suggests that the top 15 companies collectively account for just over 20% of the market.
Only 20% for the top 15. Wow.
Yeah, leaving a huge portion served by literally thousands of smaller, often regional players.
But is that changing?
Yes, there's a very clear and accelerating trend of consolidation underway. And it's being decisively led by the industry's largest participants. Major players like Assa Abloy, Honeywell, Allegion, they are actively and aggressively using mergers and acquisitions, M&A.
To do what?
To deepen their vertical integration, expand their technological capabilities, and rapidly consolidate market share. This dynamic is fundamentally reshaping the competitive landscape. It's creating larger, more integrated solution providers who can offer comprehensive end-to-end security ecosystems from the physical lock on the door right through to the cloud-based access control software managing it all.
Okay, so we've identified the company as a Abloy and the dynamic market it operates in. Now, who are the toughest locks to pick in the competitive arena? Who are their main rivals?
Well, based on sheer scale and the breadth of their portfolios, the primary global rivals are probably Allegion Pluuk, Dormakaba Holding AG, and maybe to a lesser extent these days, Fortune Brands Innovations.
What about Stanley Black & Decker? Weren't they big in security?
They were, but interestingly, they've largely divested their security businesses over the past few years, so they're no longer a direct head-to-head competitor in the same way.
Got it. Okay, let's start with Allegion Pluuk. What's their story?
They were strategically spun off from Ingersoll Rand back in 2013. They've established themselves as a major global provider with some incredibly iconic brands. Think Schlage.
Oh, yeah. Everyone knows Schlage.
Exactly. Dominant leader in North American residential and commercial locks. Plus, they have Von Duprin for essential exit devices, those push bars on emergency doors, and LCN for door closers.
How big are they compared to Assa Abloy?
They did about $3.77 billion in revenue in 2024. So formidable, absolutely. Especially strong in the Americas, where they generate over 3/4 of their sales.
Okay. Allegion is a big one, especially in the Americas. Who else?
Then there's Dormakaba Holding AG. They're Swiss-based, a global security group formed from a significant merger in 2015 between Dorma and Kaba.
Right, Dorma and Kaba.
They're firmly positioned as one of the top three players globally. They offer a very broad and deep portfolio, everything from mechanical door hardware, advanced entrance systems, electronic access control, sophisticated key systems, the works. Their annual turnover is over CHF 2.8 billion.
Where are they strongest geographically?
They have a particularly strong presence in Europe and also the Asia-Pacific region. So they're a direct competitor in many of Assa Abloy's key markets outside the Americas.
Okay. And you mentioned Fortune Brands Innovations, Inc.
Yeah, their overall business is much larger and more diversified, but their security segment is relevant here. It includes the highly recognized Master Lock.
The padlock people.
Exactly. And SentrySafe for fire-resistant safes. They have leading positions in those specific niches. Their security segment alone generated over $722 million in sales in 2024. So they have a significant presence, just maybe not as broad as Allegion or Dormakaba across the entire access solutions spectrum.
And Stanley Black & Decker is mostly out of the picture now.
Pretty much. In terms of direct competition in core access solutions, as I mentioned, they sold off their mechanical security businesses to Dormakaba, their electronic security business to Securitas, and their automatic doors business, Stanley Access Technologies, to Allegion. So while they're still a huge industrial company, their direct overlap is now significantly limited.
When you look at all these players, though, ASSA ABLOY's unmatched market position really stands out, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. It's a defining characteristic. They are the definitive global market leader in access solutions, a commanding position they've systematically built and defended for decades now.
Their scale is just bigger.
Unparalleled scale, yeah. Sales figures significantly larger than their closest competitors, and they hold leading market share across numerous product categories and geographies. Think ABLOY, high security locks in Europe, Norton door closers, Adams Rite exit devices in North America. The list goes on. This leadership provides immense compounding advantages.
And that leadership isn't just about size, you said earlier. It's protected by what analysts call an economic moat.
Exactly. A wide and durable economic moat. It's not just about being big. It's about having deeply ingrained competitive advantages that are incredibly difficult, if not impossible, for rivals to replicate.
What are the key elements of that moat?
Well, one of their biggest assets, and one you probably interact with without even knowing it, is their brand strength and portfolio.
They own a lot of brands, right?
An astonishing portfolio of over 200 brands globally. It's incredible. This includes powerful global master brands like ASSA ABLOY itself for commercial applications. Then there's Yale.
Yale locks, yeah. Mm-hmm. Synonymous with home security for millions.
Absolutely. That name recognition is a huge asset. An HID in secure identity solutions. This multi-brand strategy lets them combine global strength with precise local market relevance. It fosters deep customer loyalty and creates a significant barrier to competitors who just can't match that brand equity or local trust.
Okay, strong brands. What else?
Then there's their unmatched scale and distribution network. Operations in over 70 countries. They have a global manufacturing and distribution footprint that's simply unparalleled in this industry.
And scale means cost advantages.
Significant cost advantages, yes. Through enormous economies of scale in manufacturing, global procurement, efficient logistics, and crucially, remember that decentralized structure. It allows for localized assembly and adaptation to regional standards and codes, so they can supply products efficiently and responsively to customers worldwide.
So they get the benefits of being huge, but can act local too.
Precisely. They function with the agility of a local specialist while leveraging the profound resources of a global titan. That combination is exceedingly difficult for more centralized competitors to replicate effectively. By empowering those regional teams, they can effectively mitigate localized risks and capture opportunities that a top-down, one-size-fits-all approach might completely miss.
And we keep coming back to this, their largest installed base in aftermarket dominance. You'd say this is their most formidable advantage.
Arguably, yes. Almost unassailable. This vast installed base of products across the globe directly fuels that stable, high-margin aftermarket business, 2/3 of their revenue, remember.
Which creates high switching costs.
Incredibly high switching costs. Customers are far more likely to turn to the original manufacturer, ASSA ABLOY, or one of its brands, for replacements, upgrades, ongoing services. It's just easier, often more reliable. It becomes a self-perpetuating cycle of revenue.
This captive revenue stream provides that defensive ballast against downturn.
Exactly. And a rock-solid foundation for consistent, predictable profitability. Once their product is installed, customers often stick with them for the entire life cycle, maybe decades. It's an incredibly sticky and predictable source of income, the envy of many industrial companies, I assure you.
And to stay ahead in a tech landscape that's changing so fast, they rely heavily on technology and R&D leadership.
They have to. ASSA ABLOY consistently invests around 4% of its substantial revenue in research and development. In 2023, that was a massive SE, 5.7 billion.
5.7 billion krona. Mm. Roughly half a billion US dollars just on R&D.
Yeah, an enormous investment. It fuels a robust and continuous innovation pipeline. They have a strategic target, generate 25% of sales from products launched within the last 3 years.
How are they doing on that target?
Remarkably close. They hit 23% in 2024. Their R&D efforts are clearly focused on leading the industry's digital transformation, strong emphasis on electromechanical solutions, mobile access, and increasingly sustainable products.
Sustainable products, too, like energy efficiency.
Exactly. Meeting customer demand there, but also differentiating their products further.
Okay, brands, scale, aftermarket, R&D. Mm. What's the last piece of the moat?
Their proven M&A platform. It's not just a growth lever. It's a core competency and a competitive advantage in itself.
Nearly 400 successful acquisitions, you said.
Right. They have a profoundly well-honed, almost industrialized process for identifying strategic targets, doing the due diligence, realizing synergies, and critically, growing those acquired businesses effectively. This platform allows them to continuously expand their already massive installed base, acquire cutting-edge new technologies, and rapidly enter adjacent high-growth markets. It just keeps strengthening their overall economic moat and market leadership.
But even the global leader isn't immune to threats, right? What keeps ASSA ABLOY on guard? What forces them to keep innovating and adapting?
Well, one major threat is technology disruption from new entrants, that profound shift from mechanical to smart connected locks. It has actually, somewhat paradoxically, lowered barriers to entry for certain types of companies.
Tech companies.
Exactly. Consumer electronics giants like Samsung, maybe Xiaomi. Companies with deep software expertise, massive brand recognition in the consumer space, and existing IoT ecosystems. They're now actively leveraging those strengths to enter the smart lock market.
And the risk is they could commoditize the hardware.
Potentially, yes. They could shift the perceived value towards the software platform, the data it generates, the seamless user experience within their ecosystem.
This raises a truly important question, doesn't it? Will the primary value in security shift from the physical lock itself, its robust engineering, to the software platform, the data, the network effects of a smart home ecosystem?
It's a key long-term challenge for traditional hardware companies like ASSA ABLOY. These new players often compete with very different business models, different cost structures. They could potentially put significant pricing pressure on mid-tier incumbents, especially in the residential space.
And with connected products comes the inherent risk of cybersecurity and data privacy issues.
Always. As products become increasingly interconnected, rely on cloud infrastructure, they inevitably become more vulnerable to sophisticated cyber attacks. A significant high-profile security breach involving their smart locks or access control systems, that could be devastating.
Also,
it could severely damage brand reputation, lead to costly legal liability, and profoundly erode consumer and commercial customer trust, not just for ASSA ABLOY, but potentially for the entire smart security industry.
So it demands constant investment in security.
Continuous, substantial, proactive investment in cutting-edge security protocols, robust encryption, constant software updates. It's critical. It raises that crucial question. In a world of increasingly connected devices, how do you ensure the digital lock on your door is truly, unequivocally secure? This is a continuous battle, an arms race really never truly won for any company in this space.
Makes sense. And finally, there are the ever-present pricing and macroeconomic pressures.
Right. In a challenging global economic environment, high inflation, rising interest rates, consumers and businesses naturally become more price sensitive. This creates an opening for lower cost competitors, particularly in the more commoditized segments. And it puts sustained pressure on the premium pricing that ASSA ABLOY's powerful brands traditionally command.
Okay, a complex competitive landscape with real threats. Let's shift gears now and look at the story told by the numbers. Let's dive into ASSA ABLOY's financial performance over the past, say, 5 to 7 years. What does it reveal?
Well, it reveals a company truly characterized by consistent growth, remarkably resilient profitability, and exceptionally strong cash flow generation, even through significant global disruptions like the pandemic.
Let's start with revenue growth. How has that looked?
It demonstrates a remarkable and consistent ability to grow the top line through a balanced combination of organic growth, selling more existing stuff, and acquired growth from all those M&A deals. Total sales grew impressively from about $84 billion in 2018 to over $150 billion in 2024.
That's roughly a 10% compound annual growth rate.
Pretty strong.
Very strong for an industrial company of this scale. And their resilience was particularly evident during 2020, the pandemic year, despite an 8% organic decline then.
Which is understandable given the circumstances.
Right. But they managed to offset it partially with 4% acquired growth, showcasing just how defensive and strategic that M&A engine truly is. And this was quickly followed by a powerful rebound, double-digit organic growth in both 2021 at 11% and 2022 at 12% as markets recovered strongly.
What about more recently? Has the growth mix changed? More recently, yes. The growth narrative has been predominantly driven by acquisitions. In 2023, organic growth moderated to 3%, still respectable, while acquired growth, largely from that transformative HHI acquisition, contributed a robust 8%.
And 2024.
Similar pattern. 2024 saw a slight organic sales decline of 1%, mainly due to those softer residential markets we talked about. But this was handily bolstered by a strong 8% contribution from acquisitions.
So M&A is really carrying the growth baton lately.
It certainly sustained the top line momentum. Q1 2024 further highlighted this divergence, a 2% organic decline blamed on weak residential and tough comparables in global technologies, while acquired net growth was a very strong 11%. It clearly underscores the strategic importance and buffering effect of their M&A engine, especially during periods of softer organic demand or economic uncertainty. It really acts as a shock absorber.
Okay, consistent top-line growth, increasingly fueled by M&A. What about profitability trends? How have their margins held up?
This is a real hallmark of ASSA ABLOY's financial performance. The remarkable stability and underlying strength of its operating margins. The adjusted operating, or EBIT, margin has consistently remained within or near the company's ambitious target range of 15 to 17%.
15 to 17% EBIT margin. That's impressive for an industrial manufacturer.
It is. The only notable exception was the pandemic-affected year of 2020, where it temporarily dipped below that.
Wow, this is a powerful testament to their strong pricing power, isn't it? Allowing them to pass on increased costs, and also that relentless focus on efficiency you mentioned.
Absolutely. The margin actually expanded to a record 16.2% in 2024, demonstrating truly excellent operational execution, even in a challenging environment.
16.2% in 2024, record high.
And what's perhaps even more impressive, even in the face of that negative organic growth in Q1 2024, the company delivered a record high quarterly margin of 16.3% if you exclude the impact of the HHI acquisition.
How do they manage that with falling volumes?
Driven by proactive cost actions, ongoing efficiency programs, and also some help from lower direct material costs compared to the prior year. This incredible ability to protect and even expand margins during periods of volume pressure. It's a key indicator of a high-quality, exceptionally well-managed industrial business that's really in control of its own destiny.
Okay, strong growth, strong and stable margins.
Mm-hmm.
What about cash? Does the profit translate into actual cash flow?
Oh, yes. What underpins all of this, truly powering their strategic moves, is their incredible cash generation. ASSA ABLOY is a prolific cash generator, consistently converting an exceptionally high percentage of its earnings into tangible cash.
How strong has it been?
Operating cash flow has been robust throughout the period. It reached a record SC $25.2 billion in 2023, significantly aided by effective working capital management. For 2024, it remains strong at SC $23.1 billion.
And their cash conversion rate. How much of profit becomes cash?
Consistently impressive. Often over 100% in many periods, including 103% in Q2 2025. This fundamentally underscores the high quality and reliability of their reported earnings. It's not just accounting profit, it's real cash.
And this strong, predictable, abundant cash flow is the absolute lifeblood of the company's capital allocation strategy, right?
Absolutely. It enables them to fund their extensive R&D investments, maintain those consistent and growing dividend payments, and of course, fuel their robust acquisition pipeline without undue financial stress.
Okay, finally on financials. Debt levels and capital structure, especially considering that huge HHI acquisition. How did that impact things?
Well, their net debt remained relatively stable from 2018 through 2022. Then, as expected, it saw a significant but strategic increase in 2023, rising to SEK 64.1 billion.
And that was directly due to financing HHI?
Directly and expectedly, yes. It was a result of financing that landmark USD 4.3 billion acquisition.
And did that impact their return metrics? Like return on capital employed?
Yes. Consequently, ROCE saw a temporary expected dip in 2023 and 2024 as that large increase in the capital base from the acquisition was absorbed into their financial statements. However, management's objective is steadfast.
Which is?
To maintain a solid capital structure that meticulously safeguards the company's long-term viability while keeping capital costs optimized. It ensures continued financial flexibility for future growth initiatives and strategic maneuvers. It was a deliberate strategic move taking on debt for HHI that has a short-term financial impact, but is really designed for powerful long-term strength and market position.
Okay, that paints a very clear financial picture. Strong growth, resilient margins, great cash flow, and a strategic approach to debt even with large acquisitions. Now that we've parsed the numbers, let's look at how ASSA ABLOY charts its course for the future. Let's focus on its sophisticated growth strategy and how it allocates all that capital it generates.
Right. And their growth strategy is truly multifaceted and deeply disciplined. While M&A is undoubtedly a prominent and powerful feature, management consistently views organic growth as the most potent and highest quality value creator over the long term.
Growing the core business from within.
Exactly. And this is vigorously pursued through a deep, almost forensic understanding of specific customer needs and evolving market trends.
How do they foster that organic growth?
It starts with customer relevance and verticalization. They don't just sell generic locks. They segment their vast customer base into specific vertical markets. Think the distinct needs of healthcare facilities versus educational institutions versus the hospitality industry.
Right. Very different requirements.
Very different. They develop highly tailored solutions that precisely address those specific end user requirements. This truly customer-centric approach is supported by innovative tools like their BIM-enabled software ecosystem, Opening Studio.
Opening Studio, what does that do?
Opening Studio is a fantastic example of their digital innovation in action. Think of it as a super smart digital blueprint tool for doors and hardware. It allows architects and designers to seamlessly integrate ASSA ABLOY's locks, door hardware, access systems directly into their 3D building models right from the very outset of a project.
So it makes it easy for architects to stack their products.
It does that, but it's more profound. It ensures everything from critical fire codes to security flows are correct right from the drawing board. It saves immense time, reduces costly errors down the line, and ensures their products are literally designed into the building fabric. This comprehensive digital tool is now even being rolled out in emerging markets to foster deeper client relationships there.
And speaking of emerging markets, are they actively pursuing growth there?
Yes, aggressively pursuing emerging market penetration. Their strategy involves establishing a robust local presence, developing products meticulously suited to local standards, and importantly, local price points, and making strategic bolt-on acquisitions to gain rapid market access and local expertise.
Any recent examples?
Yeah, recent acquisitions of Forte in Peru and Innovador in Brazil are prime examples of this strategy in action. They're strengthening their crucial foothold in the rapidly growing Latin American market.
Okay, organic growth is key. But a central theme seems to be digital transformation, leading that shift to smart security.
It's a central and defining tenet of their overarching strategy. They are absolutely determined to lead the industry's profound secular shift away from traditional mechanical access solutions towards sophisticated electromechanical and fully digital access solutions. This transformation isn't just seen as an option, it's viewed as the key long-term driver of sustainable and profitable growth for the entire company.
And are they specifically pushing the adoption of electromechanical solutions?
With significant vigor, yes. The company is strategically investing in cutting-edge innovation and enhancing its global sales capabilities to accelerate the adoption of these higher-value electronic products across all their segments.
And is it working? Are sales growing there?
The focus is yielding tangible and impressive results. Even as overall organic growth was modestly negative in Q1 2024, the organic sales of electromechanical solutions in their regional divisions grew by a strong 6%. And in Q2 2025, sales of electromechanical products grew an even more impressive 12% when adjusted for currency. It demonstrates truly robust and accelerating demand for these crucial technological upgrades.
And this relentless digital shift also strategically enables them to develop entirely new business models, right? Like subscriptions.
Exactly. They're actively and successfully growing their subscription-based offerings. Those saw a healthy 17% growth in 2023, far outpacing other areas. They're launching innovative new platforms like Centrios, that cloud-based access control solution specifically designed for SMEs we mentioned earlier.
Democratizing advanced security.
Right. And this fundamentally shifts their business model away from just one-time hardware sales towards ongoing, predictable software and service relationships. That's a significant and high-quality strategic move that enhances revenue stability and customer stickiness.
This relentless focus on new product development and innovation seems absolutely fundamental to their long-term success, then.
It is. And it's backed by significant and sustained investment in R&D. Remember that annual commitment of roughly 4% of sales? SEK, $5.7 billion in 2023.
An absolute spend that dwarfs what most rivals can manage.
It creates a massive innovation gap. And this deep commitment translates into impressive and consistent innovation output. They have that ambitious goal. 25% of sales from products launched in the last 3 years. They hit 23% in 2024. Very close.
How many new products are we talking about?
That same year, they launched over 550 new products globally and registered more than 250 new patents. It showcases a really prolific pace of invention.
And the focus is on sustainability, too.
Focus on both sustainability and cutting-edge technology, addressing future market needs. This innovation focus not only meets growing customer demand for green solutions, but also significantly differentiates their products, creating an even stronger, more forward-looking moat against competition.
Any examples of that?
Sure. They've developed the Q-Max thermally enhanced door core, which dramatically improves energy efficiency by over 30% in commercial building bores. And they acquired a company called Kinetron.
Kinetron.
They're specialists in motion-based energy harvesting technology. This tech is used in self-powered products like Assa Abloy's pulse cylinders and padlocks.
Self-powered locks. How does that work?
I imagine a lock that generates its own power just from the motion of inserting or turning the key, or even just opening and closing the door. No batteries needed. That's the kind of sustainable innovation they're pursuing.
Wow, that's clever. Okay, now let's talk about capital allocation. How do they decide where to put all that cash they generate?
It's driven by a very disciplined, consistent, and long-term approach with that robust operating cash flow as its foundational engine.
And M&A seems like a huge part of that.
Mergers and acquisitions are undoubtedly the most prominent and powerful tool in their capital allocation playbook. They are a quintessential serial acquirer, remember, nearly 400 acquisitions since 1994.
And it's not just growth for growth's sake.
No, it's a deliberate, systematic method to continuously strengthen market positions, acquire cutting-edge new technologies, and strategically expand into adjacent high-growth areas. The pace remains remarkably high, 24 deals completed in 2023, another 5 in just Q2 2025 alone.
And the biggest recent one was HHI.
Right. The landmark acquisition of the hardware and home improvement division from Spectrum Brands for $4.3 billion completed in June 2023. Largest ever. It substantially bolsters their crucial presence in the North American residential market, adding iconic brands like Kwikset and Baldwin to their portfolio.
And they expect synergies from that.
They expect to realize approximately $100 million in annual cost synergies from the HHI integration over a five-year period. This consistent and successful execution of their M&A strategy isn't just a tactic, it's a core competency that has been central to their multi-decade value creation story.
What about returning capital to shareholders? Dividend policy.
They're deeply committed to providing a reliable and consistently growing return through dividends. Their long-term objective is to distribute between 33% and 50% of the company's income after tax as dividends.
And their track record.
Incredibly impressive. Since its founding in 1994, the company has never lowered its dividend per share.
Never lowered it in 30 years. That's remarkable consistency.
It is. For the 2023 fiscal year, the board proposed SEK 5.40 per share, a 13% increase. For 2024, it was increased by another 9% to SEK 5.90 per share. This consistent growth signals confidence and a real commitment to shareholder value.
What about reinvesting in the business itself? Capital expenditure priorities.
Reinvesting for strong organic growth and efficiency is their absolute first priority. As we noted, about 4% of sales go straight to R&D to fuel that critical innovation pipeline. They also continuously invest in optimizing their vast operational footprint through these manufacturing footprint programs, or MFPs.
Consolidating factories.
Consolidating factories and warehouses, yeah. To enhance efficiency, streamline logistics, reduce structural costs. The ninth such program, launched in 2023, is expected to generate over SEK 0.7 billion in annual savings once it's complete. These programs are a key driver of their resilient and expanding margins. It shows efficiency is always top of mind.
What about share repurchase programs? Do they buy back stock?
Interestingly, and in contrast to many of its peers, especially U.S. companies, Assa Abloy does not use share buybacks as a primary mechanism for returning capital to shareholders. While repurchases are authorized by the board, they are used almost exclusively to secure the company's obligations related to its long-term incentive programs for employees, not for broad capital returns to boost the share price. For instance, no shares are repurchased for that purpose in 2023.
So strategic M&A and reliable dividends are the preferred uses of excess capital for shareholders.
That seems to be the clear philosophy.
This disciplined framework, which clearly prioritizes long-term compounding growth and strategic expansion over, say, short-term financial engineering like large-scale buybacks, it really stands out for a company of this scale. It demonstrates a real long-term vision.
It does. It's quite characteristic of some long-term-oriented European industrial companies.
Okay. Every company, no matter how strong or well-managed, faces obstacles. Let's talk about the key risk factors that ASSA ABLOY has to navigate. What are the main headwinds?
Well, the most significant external risk is undoubtedly their cyclical exposure to construction and real estate markets.
Even with that big aftermarket buffer.
Even with that crucial fact that roughly two-thirds of revenue comes from the more stable, resilient aftermarket. That remaining one-third is directly tied to new construction projects. Mm-hmm. And that segment is inherently sensitive to broader macroeconomic factors, interest rates, economic growth, consumer, and business confidence.
And recent performance has shown this sensitivity.
Definitely. Weakness in the residential market, particularly in Europe and China, contributed to that negative organic growth we saw in some divisions recently. A severe or prolonged downturn in global construction and renovation activity would inevitably impact the company's overall growth trajectory, even with that strong aftermarket business providing some cushion.
Okay, cyclicality is one. What about geographic and geopolitical risks? Being so global must expose them.
It does. With operations in over 70 countries, selling in over 180, they're inherently exposed to a variety of these complex risks. There's a degree of geographic concentration, of course.
North America and Europe being the big ones.
Right. 54% North America, 31% Europe. This makes their overall results highly dependent on the sustained economic health and stability of these mature markets.
And risks in emerging markets.
While emerging markets are a vital source of long-term growth, operations there carry distinct risks. Political instability, unpredictable regulatory changes, economic volatility. The weak Chinese market, for example, has been a notable recent headwind for their Asia-Pacific division.
What about trade issues? Tariffs?
Broader geopolitical tensions can easily lead to disruptive trade disputes and the imposition of tariffs. These can significantly disrupt global supply chains and increase costs. Management has specifically cited the ongoing tariff situation in the U.S. as a continuous area of macroeconomic uncertainty they have to actively manage.
Okay. Then there's the technology side. Technology disruption and obsolescence risks.
Yes. The rapid, continuous technological evolution and access control presents both a major opportunity and a significant inherent risk. That relentless shift towards digital, connected, smart home integrated solutions requires continuous, substantial investment in R&D.
And if they fail to keep pace?
Failure to innovate rapidly could easily lead to product obsolescence and a material loss of market share to more agile competitors, including those tech-native new entrants we discussed earlier.
And the flip side of connected tech is cybersecurity threats.
Exactly. As we discussed, interconnected products unfortunately create entirely new vectors for cyber attacks. A high-profile security breach involving their smart locks or access control systems could result in significant reputational damage, costly legal liability, and profoundly erode customer trust.
Raising that crucial question again, how do you ensure the digital lock on your door is truly secure?
It's a continuous battle, a relentless arms race against evolving threats, a constant challenge for any company operating in this space.
What about operational and financial risks within the company itself?
Well, their strategic reliance on that active M&A strategy introduces significant M&A integration risk. The successful, seamless integration of acquired companies, particularly a large and complex one like HHI, is absolutely crucial for realizing the projected synergies and achieving the targeted returns on investment.
And if integration fails?
Failure in that intricate process could easily lead to operational disruptions, cost overruns, and financial underperformance that weighs on the overall business.
Other operational risks, supply chain.
Yes. They're also exposed to inherent fluctuations in supply chain and raw material costs, critical metals like steel, electronic components. Global supply chain disruptions, like those seen during the pandemic, can severely impact production schedules and lead to increased logistics and manufacturing costs.
And being a Swedish company reporting in krona, currency risk.
Right. As a Swedish company reporting in SEK, but with the vast majority of its sales and profits generated in other global currencies, their reported financial results are naturally subject to significant currency translation impacts. A strong Swedish krona, for example, can create a notable headwind for reported sales and earnings when those foreign currencies are converted back. We saw that in Q2 2025, when currency effects had a negative 8% impact on reported sales.
Okay, it's clear they face a complex web of challenges. But what about the people steering this massive ship? let's delve into the management quality and the overall corporate governance, and then let's try to bring it all together with a look at the valuation analysis to understand how the market views this unique company.
Right. Well, ASSA ABLOY is indeed led by an exceptionally experienced executive team. They have a deep, proven track record in the industrial sector. The president and CEO, Nico Delvo, appointed back in 2018, brought extensive relevant experience from Atlas Copco Group.
Atlas Copco, another big Swedish industrial player, right? Known for decentralization and M&A.
Exactly. Renowned globally for that model. So his background aligns perfectly and synergistically with ASSA ABLOY's own operational philosophy and ambitious growth model. His tenure so far has been marked by continued disciplined focus on innovation, relentless operational efficiency, and crucially, the successful execution of that largest ever acquisition, HHI.
And the CFO.
The executive vice president and CFO, Eric Peter, joined in 2019. He also hails from Atlas Copco, where he held a key financial control position. His background further reinforces the company's disciplined approach to financial management, rigorous cost control, and strategic capital allocation.
So top leadership with relevant, successful track records.
Yes. This experienced leadership team, combined with a broader executive team composed of seasoned leaders with deep industry and regional expertise, really contributes to their strong strategic vision and impressive execution capabilities. They've consistently delivered robust growth and maintained industry-leading profitability through various economic cycles and external shocks.
And their capital allocation discipline seems key.
It's a core organizational strength, reflecting a clear philosophy from the top. The leadership team has consistently maintained a highly disciplined, value-oriented approach, prioritizing strategic reinvestment in the core business for organic growth first, then pursuing value-accretive strategic M&A, and then reliably returning capital through that consistent dividend.
And avoiding big buybacks, focusing on compounding growth.
Exactly. This disciplined framework reflects a long-term, patient perspective on value creation.
What about corporate governance and board composition? Who oversees management?
It's quite telling. The board of directors includes direct representatives from the company's major long-term shareholders, notably Investment AB Latour and Melker Sherling AB.
These are well-known Swedish industrial holding companies with a long-term focus.
Precisely. Focused on stable, long-term investments. In fact, the chairman of the board, Johan Schertensen, is also the CEO of Investment AB Latour.
Having major long-term owners directly involved on the board, what effect does that have?
This type of board, with deeply engaged long-term industrial owners, often translates directly into a remarkably stable strategic focus. It helps avoid the pressures of short-termism that can plague other publicly traded companies.
So it supports that consistent long-term strategy we've been discussing.
It likely contributes significantly, yeah.
Yeah.
Preventing impulsive shifts, ensuring capital allocation aligns with sustainable value creation over decades, not just quarters. The board's composition seems to reflect a robust balance of strong shareholder representation and independent directors who bring diverse industrial and technological expertise.
Okay. Strong management. Aligned board.
Mm-hmm.
So how does the market actually view this powerful, well-managed, strategically sound company? Let's finally look at the valuation analysis. Does the market price reflect its strengths?
Well, when we compare ASSA ABLOY's current trading multiples to its historical ranges, we see that it has consistently commanded a premium valuation, which makes sense, right? Reflecting its definitive market leadership, strong profitability, consistent growth trajectory.
What are the current multiples looking like? Say, price to earnings.
Right now, as of mid-2025, their trailing 12-month PE ratio is somewhere in the range of 22x to 26x. Historically, it's ranged from about 18.7x up to maybe 28.2x. So the current valuation appears to be pretty much in line or perhaps slightly below its recent historical averages.
So not trading at a huge premium to its own history right now.
Doesn't appear to be, no. Which could be an interesting point for investors.
What about other metrics? Like EV/EBITDA?
Yeah, their enterprise value to EBITDA multiple, often a better measure for operational businesses like this, is currently around 14.3x to 14.7x. Now, that is notably below its five-year average, which was closer to 17.0x and well below its peak of nearly 22x back in 2021.
So that operational metric clearly suggests the valuation has moderated from recent peaks. Possibly a more attractive entry point based on that?
Potentially, yes. And the price-to-book ratio is around 3.5x, also below its five-year high, further indicating perhaps more reasonable valuation from an asset perspective.
How does it stack up against its peers, Belegion, Dormakaba?
When we compare ASSA ABLOY to its closest publicly traded peers, we see some interesting dynamics. Assa Abloy trades at a notable P.E. premium to Allegion and Fortune Brands.
Which seems justifiable given its superior scale and leadership.
I'd say so, yeah. Justifiable given the scale, market leadership, unparalleled geographic diversification. Dormakappa's P.E. multiple currently looks a bit elevated, maybe less directly comparable due to some unique factors impacting their earnings right now.
What about that EBITDA comparison?
On an EBITDA basis, which often gives a clearer picture of operational value, Assa Abloy and Allegion actually trade at very similar multiples, both around that 14x mark.
Interesting. So the market sees their operational quality as similar.
Suggests the market views their operational profitability, business quality, and risk profiles quite similarly. And importantly, both Assa Abloy and Allegion trade at a clear premium to Dormakappa and Fortune Brands on this metric, reflecting their stronger market positions and higher consistent profitability in the core access solutions space.
You mentioned Allegion's high ROE earlier.
Yeah, Allegion's exceptionally high return on equity is noteworthy, but it likely reflects a more leveraged capital structure compared to Assa Abloy. Assa Abloy's ROE of around 14.5% is very solid and respectable for an industrial company of its scale, especially given its more conservative capital structure. Overall, the market seems to acknowledge Assa Abloy's strong, defensible position and consistent profitability compared to its peers, especially looking at operational multiples like EBITDA.
So what are the key valuation drivers and sensitivities going forward? What could push the stock price up or down?
Well, a sustained acceleration in organic growth, especially in those high-margin electromechanical products we talked about, would very likely lead to multiple expansion for the stock. Conversely, a prolonged period of flat or negative organic growth, perhaps from a severe construction downturn, could certainly pressure the valuation downwards.
And margins are key too.
Absolutely. Their stable and predictable margins are highly valued by the market. Any significant erosion in profitability would be a major negative catalyst.
What about HHI integration?
The successful integration of HHI and the full realization of its targeted USD 100 million in synergies are absolutely critical to justifying the substantial capital they deployed. Any significant shortfalls there could definitely lead to a re-rating of the stock. And of course, as a large global industrial company, its valuation remains sensitive to the broader global economic outlook, particularly those cyclical trends in construction and renovation.
Okay, that gives us a good sense of the valuation picture. So let's try to synthesize all of this. What's the overall investment thesis for Assa Abloy? Let's consider both the bullish and the bearish perspectives.
Right. From a bullish perspective, the investment case for Assa Abloy is firmly rooted in its status as a high-quality, truly global industrial leader. It possesses that wide and durable economic moat we discussed, and crucially, it has significant exposure to powerful long-term secular growth trends.
Okay, let's break down the bull case. First point.
First, it's all about structural growth from secular tailwinds. The company is incredibly well-positioned to benefit from enduring global trends. That increasing non-negotiable need for security driven by urbanization and rising safety concerns. The ongoing irreversible digital transformation of buildings and infrastructure. And that powerful tech upgrade cycle from traditional mechanical locks to higher-value electromechanical and cloud-based solutions.
So it's not just a cyclical story tied to construction.
Exactly. It's a profound structural one, providing a long runway for sustainable growth for decades to come.
Okay, secular growth. Second bullish point.
Second, its dominant market position and wide economic moat. Truly formidable, incredibly difficult to replicate. Their unparalleled portfolio of powerful global and local brands, unmatched manufacturing and distribution scale, deep expertise in navigating complex regulations, industry-leading R&D budget, it all combines to create significant, almost insurmountable barriers to entry.
And the installed base feeding the aftermarket.
That's the single most powerful asset, arguably. That massive installed base worldwide continuously feeds a highly profitable, remarkably resilient aftermarket business, creating incredibly sticky customer relationships and very high switching costs.
Third reason to be bullish.
Third, they have a proven value creation model. This company boasts a multi-decade track record of creating substantial, consistent shareholder value through a disciplined, highly repeatable business model. It brilliantly combines steady organic growth, driven by continuous innovation and customer relevance, with that programmatic, value-accretive M&A strategy that continuously strengthens its market position and expands its tech capabilities.
All executed by that experienced management team.
Flawlessly executed, generally speaking, by a seasoned, experienced management team with deep, relevant experience in running complex, decentralized global industrial businesses.
And the final bullish point? Defensive characteristics.
Exactly. their defensive characteristics, and recession resilience. The business model's heavy reliance on the aftermarket, 67% of sales, provides a significant, proven defensive cushion against broader economic downturns. Revenue from replacements, upgrades, essential services is far less volatile and cyclical than sales tied directly to new construction,
resulting in more predictable earnings and cash flow.
Compared to typical industrial companies, yes, this inherent resilience was clearly demonstrated during the 2020 pandemic, and it remains a key quality attribute that distinguishes them.
Okay, that's a compelling bull case. Now, for the bearish perspective, what are the key risks and headwinds that could challenge this leader?
First, that cyclical and macroeconomic exposure. While buffered significantly by the aftermarket, the company is fundamentally not immune to a severe or protracted global economic slowdown. A significant downturn in construction and renovation activity, particularly in North America and Europe, would inevitably negatively impact organic growth and profitability. We've seen hints of that softness in residential markets recently.
Second bear point, M&A risk.
Yes, the large-scale M&A integration risk. The 2023 acquisition of HHI for USD 4.3 billion was by far the largest in their history. While strategically compelling, promising significant synergies, integrating a business of the scale and complexity carries substantial execution risk.
And failure to integrate HI well.
Failure to achieve the projected USD 100 million in synergies or to effectively manage and grow those newly acquired brands could lead to value destruction and weigh on overall financial performance, at least in the short to medium term.
Third risk, technology disruption again.
Yes, technological disruption and new competition. The access solutions market is undeniably at an inflection point. New competition is emerging from the tech sector. Large tech companies with deep software expertise, established smart home ecosystems, they could disrupt the profitable residential smart lock market, potentially commoditize the hardware, compress margins over the long term, fundamentally changing the value equation.
Plus the cybersecurity risks of connected products.
Absolutely. Increasing connectivity introduces significant continuous cybersecurity risk that could severely damage brand equity if not managed flawlessly, eroding customer trust.
And the final bearish consideration, valuation.
Valuation and margin pressure, yeah. As a recognized global leader, ASSA ABLOY has historically commanded, and still does, a premium valuation. While current multiples have moderated somewhat, they still reflect high market expectations for future performance and continued execution.
So if they fail to meet those expectations,
any failure to meet growth and margin targets or increased competitive pressure that begins to erode its pricing power could lead to a derating of its valuation multiples, impacting shareholder returns.
So after this deep dive, you now have a pretty comprehensive understanding, I hope, of the silent giant behind many of the access points in your life, ASSA ABLOY. You've seen how they've built this incredibly resilient and profitable business by smartly combining physical products with a massive service aftermarket, all powered by that relentless acquisition strategy.
Mm-hmm.
The question for you maybe is this. As our homes, our offices, our very cities become smarter, more connected, increasingly digital, where will the future of security truly be found? Primarily in the robust hardware or in the intelligent software, or maybe only in the seamless, impenetrable integration of both?
Ultimately, I think the central consideration for anyone looking at this space is whether ASSA ABLOY's deeply established moat, their unmatched scale, those powerful structural tailwinds are robust and enduring enough to effectively navigate the ongoing cyclical headwinds and the long-term disruptive threats from those new, agile, tech-focused competitors. It's a truly compelling narrative of physical security fundamentally meeting the digital age, and it's one that is still very much unfolding.